Itmar. Omar Rav Nachman, Omar Shmuel, Mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. Chachamim tiknu lehem livnos Yisrael. Rabbi, could I show you just to close the door? Or maybe it's... I don't know what's going
on.
There's some problem with the air conditioning. Maybe you could ask Rabbi Wexler if he knows how to solve it. He's my man, you know. Because we definitely could use air conditioning here, our fan.
And if it's quiet out there, maybe we should just move out there.
Maybe we'll move out there, yeah.
Can we move out here?
Right, so we'll start again. Idmar, Omer of Nachman, Omer Shmuel, Mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, Chachomim Tiknu Lahem, Livnos Yisrael, Livsula Masayim Ulalmona Mona. So does anybody remember what comment we made here on those words, Chachomim Tiknu? Correct. Teksuva is an institution that is the source of which is the Rabbana. And how much do we afford? Do we award a Besula 200 zuz, an Almana 100 zuz? Vehem heminuhu, and this is the principle called Heimamru Vehemamru, that when the Rabbana created din, they have a right to establish the circumference of the din, you know, when it applies and when it doesn't. And Heim Heminu Shem Omar Pesach Pasuch Matzasi Nema. Now, what this word Nema means is that he's believed to be Mafsid Hadiksuva. Why is he Mafsid Hadiksuva? Because if he cannot resume his normal marriage relationship with her, so Aldas came, he didn't give her a Ksuva. Ksuva is given to her because of the marriage. Now he finds a Pesach Pasuach. And again, here we get into the whole discussion about Sfek Sfeika and one Sfek again. So let's say, for example, if she got married and she was less than 3 years old, or let's say she was married off to a Kohen, then in such a case, we only have one Sfek. So let's focus on those cases, right? Pchusim Vashalosh or Eishes Kohen. And in those cases where there's one Sfek, he's going to have to divorce her. So he comes along and he says, look, I married her under the assumption that she was a psula. I found her to be a ba'ula. Now I can't live with her. I have to divorce her. Why should I have to pay ksuba? So he's neman lahafsid ha'd ksuba. But again, you might ask, well, maybe he's a no good liar. He's trying to get off the hook from this ksuba.
Nobody does that.
So right now, we don't know what the answer is. It's coming around the bend. You may remember it from last week, but let's make believe we don't remember. But what we do know is that Heim Amru, that the Chachomim established the Ksuva, and they said in what situations is he believed to be Mafsid HaDiksuva. And they believed him to say Pesach Pasuach Matzasi. Now the real issue here is, okay, Pesach Pasuach Matzasi, but how does he know that he found the Pesach Pasuach? That's going to be the discussion later on. Okay. Now, I wanted to add another point over here. The Rashba says that he's only neman to say Pesach Pasuach if he immediately comes into Bez. That's why we set up in the Mishnah that she gets married on Yom Revi and then Yom Chamishi comes running into Bez. If, however, he delays, he only comes later on and he comes to complain, then we say, you know what? Maybe he decided he doesn't want to really stay married to this woman and he's really fabricating the whole story, then we don't believe it. So the Gemara asks the following question. Now I'm going to just present the literal translation of this Gemara's kasha, and then I'm going to make mincemeat out of this Gemara's kasha. I'm going to have to reinterpret this Gemara's kasha. But literally, what the Gemara is saying is that the whole takana of ksuba, which the Chachamim established, is now a meaningless takana, because you're just saying to a person, we don't want you to divorce your wife, and therefore we're going to have this albatross around your neck. You're going to have to pay a massive sum of money. Well, that's not going to deter him, because he's simply going to come forward and say, Pesach Patsuach Matzasi. Now, the reason why we can't take this Gemara literally is because Mahu Ilu Chachamim Takanosim sounds like as if to say the whole Takan of Tzuba is totally meaningless. That's not really so. In a case where he doesn't say Pesach Pasuach Matzasi, let's say he finds Dam Basulin, then we have the Takan of Tzuba. It's not like because of Pesach Pasuach Matzasi Nema, therefore the whole Takan of Tzuba is meaningless. What does Mar mean when it says in Cain, Mahu Ilu Chachamim V'Takanosim? So on this we have again a comment of the Rashba. Though in this case it's the Ritva, okay, it's from the same base medrash, and he says that what was Gemara bothered by? The Gemara was saying that if the Takan of Ksuba will only work in cases where he finds Damim, then in order to make that Takana meaningful, they should have added another Takana. And that other Takana is that we should guarantee that she had Dam Basula. Because again, in a case where there was no dam, and he says Pesach Pasuach Matzasi, so there's no test over here. We can't test it with dam. We have to either rely on him, and then the whole ksuba is meaningless. So to make the ksuba meaningful, we're going to have to rely on dam. Now, how can we make that takon in such a way that we'll know whether she had dam or not? Shushmin, exactly. That's called shushmin. Now, we're going to see later on that there was a minug to have Shushvina, but it was never established as part of the Takon of Ksuba. And if the Takon of Ksuba is predicated on the fact that we know that she's a Psula because we have the Dam, then that Takon should have gone a step further and added the safeguard measure of Shushvina. That's the way the Ritva interprets this Kash. Omar Rava, Rava said the following, you know what? What are you telling me? That he can undermine the Chachamim's desire that he pay Ksuba by just simply coming along and saying Pesach Pasuach Matzasi? No. Chachamim are not afraid that he'll fabricate this argument. Why not? Chazaka einanam toreach besuda mafsida. A person, just because he hates a woman, is going to lie and say, you know, I want to throw you a get. Why did he go ahead and make this whole lavish wedding? Remember we spoke about the flowers last week, if you remember? And now he's going to be mafsid his su'udah. And here's where we have the whole discussion with the Meiri, the Amshal Shlomo, if you remember from last week, that what happens if he didn't lift a finger for the su'udah? Let's say the mother of the Kala made the su'udah, or maybe there was no su'udah, whatever the case may be. Eino chinami, in such situations, he's not believed. Or do we say lo pluk? The Meiri wants to say lo plug. You know, we're not going to, in each case, we're not going to investigate, well, how much work and how much money did he spend on the, expand on the Suda? That's the way they established it. That since a person would not deliberately lie and forfeit the whole wedding and the Ksuba, and the Suda, the day after, the morning after, therefore we believe him. And we're not going to check in each case how much work he did and how much he spent and what checks he signed and what he did.
Maybe the loop is also based on the fact that in general that would be, you know, a strange thing to do, that you're looking to get divorced right after you got married. There's even without the issue of how much.
Well, you're assuming that they, you know, they have a relationship, but back in the day, you know, they were separated for a year. You know, it was a little different.
I'm saying that it's just based solely on the issue that the guy spent a lot of money on a suda. But
that's what it says right now. Okay, fine. Now, Tana, we learned in a Bryce. What we're about to embark upon now, just as a way of introduction, is a discussion about whether ksuba is drabanan or doraisa. So we learned in a brice of the following. Hoyil uknas chachamim hu lo tigba ela min haziburus. So again, I'm going to talk to you as if you know nothing, if you don't mind. I'm not going to assume anything. And you won't be insulted. Okay. Karka, which is real estate, but back in the time the Gemara is usually... You know, when I use the word real estate, you know, you think of strip malls and commercial real estate. When I say real estate in the Gemara's context, karka, it's generally speaking agricultural land, because it was an agricultural society, so the farmers would make money by producing. Karka falls into three categories. There are the two extremes, and then there's the middle of the road. The two extremes are called idis and ziburis. So idis means the best of the best, which means the karka is really rich in minerals. It's arable? Is there such a word? And with very limited effort, you can produce a whole field, a massive field of the five species of grains. That's called idis. The other extreme is called ziburis. Ziburis is the worst of the worst. You know, you got to get the shahr to work for hours in order to plow the land. It's very dry, it's very hot, and so forth and so on. The middle of the road, which is not superior, but it's not inferior, is called beinus, the middle place. So as a general rule, let's assume that whenever there's a chiyuv d'oraisa to pay a certain sum of money, then the Torah requires that if you cannot pay the money in cash, you have to offer the best of the best karka. Now, whether the best of the best is objective or subjective, let's assume it's subjective, just to make life easy. It means, let's say, if I borrow $1,000 from you and I can't pay you up, the Torah requires me to pay you up, I owe you $1,000. So in that case, you collect my idis. Again, maybe according to the market, it wouldn't be considered idis, but it's the best that I have to offer. I can't pawn off on you a ziburis karka. But if the chiyuv is the Rabbanon, then the Rabbanon did not require that you pay up with the best karka, which is called idis. They allowed you to give ziburis. Now, mind you, the price, the actual sum is the same. A larger piece of ziburis is worth on the market, it might be twice as large as the idis, but at the end of the day, in dollars and cents terms, they're identical in value. The only difference is that who wants to get stuck with ziburis? Because until you find a buyer for ziburis, you know, it's a tremendous headache.
What do you mean they're equal? It sounds like they wouldn't be equal.
Again, a larger piece, let's say for example,
larger piece.
So I'm saying if I sold you three bedrooms, you know, in this area, it would probably be worth in Afula six bedrooms. You know what I'm saying? So it's the same value in the market,
right,
in dollars and cents. But who wants to buy Afula? You're going to put this on the market in Afula, it'll take you, by the way, that's not a good example because Afula is already, you know what I'm saying? I'm dating myself. You know, it's like 2 years ago, you know. I can tell you what's going on in Carmiel, which is an hour north of Afula, where my son lives. I mean, prices, it's mamish bazooties. But what I'm just saying is, in general, you know, if I sold you a piece of property that was the size of this room in Manhattan or in Tokyo or I don't know where, it would cost the same as, let's say, if you went out to Cleveland, you could get a mansion for the same price that has 15 rooms. And here I'm giving you one little dinky space, 4x4, in Manhattan. But that's the way it works. Location, 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 right? So the difference between idis and ziburis really is not in terms of its market value, because I'm going to have to give you a larger piece of ziburis to offset the fact that it doesn't sell for the same price as the same size in idis. Now I'm going to give you this twice the size.
That's less than ideal.
But nobody wants ziburis because it's hard to find a buyer for ziburis. You know, there are plenty of people out there that are looking for idis because, you know, that's where you produce your wheat and you sell it, you market it, you become rich overnight. But who wants to work with ziburis? So if you're talking, now, if ksuba were d'oraisa, then she could collect her ksuba from what? From idis. But the Gemara says in the name of this Raisa, again, right now it's anonymous, if I remember correctly. Yeah, okay, right now, sir. That she can only collect from ziburis. And why is that so? Hoil v'knas chachomim hu. Now, there's a problem here with the language. So let's leave out the word knas, because that doesn't seem to make any sense, as the Gemara is just going to attack it right now. But just to give you the general idea, since Suba is a takonis chachamim according to this view, therefore she collects from ziburis. The Gemara right away says knasa, my knasa. A knas is something that you penalize a person for a criminal act. I mean, he's not doing anything criminal.
Is it always criminal?
I think. No. I know. Is there anything that's, you know, the knas is not criminal? I can't think of one, but you never know. Maybe you'll find one. Okay? Ela Ema, so just, you know, move it around a little bit or reinterpret it. Hoil Vitakonis Chachomim, who? Lotigba Ela Minaziburis. She has no rights to collect a ksuba from anything but ziburis, and the reason for that is because ksuba is drabon.
She's dropping the word counts.
He's dropping the word counts. Now, the classical case of a chiyuv that the Torah imposes on a person, and we're going to pick this up very soon, so this is a good introduction, is ones u'mefat. In the cases of ones u'mefat, the Torah says he has to pay chamishim kesef. Chamishim kesef, as we'll soon see, is the value of 200 zuz. And what does that remind you of, by association, 200 zuz? The ksuba l'psul. Now, in the case of Onis and Mefater, she collects from Idis. Why is that?
Doraisa.
Exactly, because it's Doraisa. Since the collection is...
Knas,
yeah, go ahead, what?
Is that Knas in those cases?
Those cases are cases of Knas.
And again, it sounds like if you're doing this parallel, maybe that's where the idea of Knas comes from.
Right, well... But in contrast to Onus and Mefata, the Ksuba is not for Knas.
No, I know it's rejected.
Right.
I know it's rejected, but Nahavamina.
Maybe
the somehow they're lining
right.
up.
But I want you to know that this case of Onus or Mefata, those aren't the only cases in which you have to pay a Chiv Doraisa. But those are good examples because the Torah says that you. Oh, here's another case that you have. Let's say your Shar gores another Shar. That's called Shar, Keren, Mazik, any of those words are appropriate. And there the Torah says explicitly, Metav Sadehu Metav Kar B'Yishalim, which means you have to pay with Idris. Again, these are all cases of a Chiv Doraisa. Now, if you backtrack a little, you remember it was Rav Shimon ben Elazar, the names are important here. Rav Shimon ben Elazar was the one who said, the Chachamim Tiknu Ksuba. And therefore, this Raisa that we're learning now that says that she collects a Ksuba from Ziburis reflects the shita of Rav Shimon ben Elazar. Okay, then we're going to soon see that there's another shita. We're not sure who it is. The Gemara is going to go back and forth about, but whatever it is, there's going to be a shita in the Tanoim that ksuba is the rice and if she collects from Ibis. Okay, then. But he writes here on the bottom that l'shitas Rav Shimon ben Elazar sheksuba imatakonis chachamim dino shetigbe mikarka ziburis. And that's the halacha of ziburis. Oh. Then he asks a very interesting question. The Gemara tells us in Bava Kamma on Daf Ches that a balchov collects from, meaning a malva collects from, give me the wrong answer. What would you say intuitively? No, but what kind of karka does he collect? It is, for sure, because the Chiv Doraisa. So guess what? The Gemara says he collects from Beinonis. That's a bit strange.
Why
does he collect from Beinonis? He should be collecting from Idis, because if any Chov that's Doraisa is collectible from Idis, then why should a Bal Chov, who obviously there's a Chiv Doraisa to pay the Alva, why does he collect only from Beinonis? So frankly speaking, I don't know the answer to this question. It seems that for some reason the Chachamim made a takana that the Balchov cannot collect from Idis. He can only collect from Beinonis. I don't know. I can't figure that out. Okay, fine. Now we move on to a different shita. And again, the names are important. Until now, we've been talking about Rav Shimon ben Elazar. Now we're going to talk about another Rav Shimon, not related to the first Rav Shimon, Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. And he says, Ksubas Isha min HaTorah. And the Gemara is going to derive this from a pasuk in the parasha of of Ones Umefate, where it says Kimora Besulos, and Moar is the scriptural word for a dowry. A dowry is usually like money that's brought into a marriage. Maybe the word dowry is not such a good word. I don't know. We'll see. But anyway, that's called Mora Besulos. So now again, we have, just to summarize, we have Rav Shimon ben Elazar that Ksuba is the Rabbanan. And now we have Rav Shimon ben Gamliel that Ksuba is Doraisa. He points out, according to Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, if Ksuba is Doraisa, that a person who claims Pesach Pasuch Matzasi is not believed. He's only believed because Heimam Ruve Heimam. But if you hold that it's Doraisa, then he has no nemanis to be Mafsid Hovik Ksuba. He would have to bring two witnesses who saw the mapa and they saw there was no dam on the mapa. Otherwise, he's not believed. That's according to Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. And I would add to this that according to Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, Lechora, she should be able to collect her ksuba from Idis. Okay, so I don't know. It seems like there are Rishonim who say that even Rav Shimon Gamliel would admit that she can't collect from Idis. I don't know why. So if I get an answer to the question why Baal Chov can't collect from Idis, then I'll give you an answer as to why, according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, like Suv is only collected from Beinidis. I don't know. Fekti Gemara Umi on Rav Shimon Gamliel Hachi. Is it really so that Rav Shimon Gamliel? I have a contradiction from another Brisa. In which Rav Shimon Gamliel goes on record as saying that Ksuba is only Durabanan. Okay, he gives you an introduction to this Braisa. There's a parasha called Mefate. I actually sent you an email zillions of years ago. I don't know if you ever got it. Okay. Alright. Because I wanted to get the red carpet ready. That's it. I come from a shul. We had a chazan by the Mechatzkel Rida. If he'd be alive today, he's about 130. But he used to sing Shechiyonim. He was world famous. Mechatzkel Rida's Shechiyonim. So the Braisa says the following: there are two parshiyos in the Torah where a person has to pay a penalty for having a relationship with a woman. One is called Mefateh, and the other called Ma'anis, Onis. Now, it's interesting. In each parasha, the Torah sort of reveals a little bit of how much of a penalty he has to pay. But it doesn't go all the way. So we're going to need to combine the two to try to figure out finally how much he has to pay. So let's go through. Kesef Yishkol Kimor Abesulos. This is the case of Mefata. Does it tell you how much kesef you pay? No. So for that, we're going to need the parsha of Ma'onis. But what it does tell you is kesef. Because you're going to see that yishkol, which is the verb of shkolim could be different types of shkolim. There are shkolim that, what? Right, shkolim chadosh, chadosh. But, you know, there's shkolim that are made up of copper, and then there's shkolim made of kesef. The kesef shkolim will consider the best, most expensive shkolim. So that even though in the parasha of Mefateh, the Torah doesn't tell you exactly how many shkolim you pay, but at least the Torah tells you it's kesef shkolim. Okay? And then the Torah says that about this payment called kesef shkolim, shehei zeh ke moar habesulos. Now what's moar habesulos? So for that we have to learn another parasha. And that's the parasha of Ma'anes. If a person is Ma'anes, again, and in both cases we're talking about a Basula, then he pays Kemora Basulos, but there the Torah specifies Chamishim. So now we're going to combine the two. Moar HaBasulos Kozeh is Kozeh. In other words, since Mora Basulos is appropriate in both cases, in Mefateh and Ma'anes, so from Mefateh, I'm going to learn it's what? What kind of shkolim is it?
Kesef.
Kesef. And in the parsha of Ma'anis, the Torah says how much you give. Naming what's the magic number? 50. And both of these payments are described as Moar HaBesulos. Moar HaBesulos means the amount of money that's usually paid to a Besula. Not in the case of Onus and Mefatah. And when is money paid to a Besula? What do we call that in our language? Ksuba. So the Ksuba should be equal to Moar HaBesulos, which is Chamisim Kesef Shkolim. And Mikan Somchu Chachomim L'Ksubas Isha Min HaTorah. It's very fascinating that the source for Ksubas Isha in the Torah is the Parsha of Onus and Mefatah, which is called the Parsha of Moar HaBesulos. What is the equivalent in like if you go back to the times of Babylonia, you know, Babylonian times, what was the monetary equivalent of Chamishim, scriptural Chamishim Kesef? 200 sis. So that's what a Basula gets. But notice it says that Ksuba is Isha Min HaTorah. So we finally found a source in Tanoim that Ksuba is a Chiv Doraisa, derived from the parish of Onus and Mefatah, Kimora HaBesulos, Chamishim Shkolim Kesef, which is the equivalent of 200 sis. And that's a Doraisa. If he comes now and claims Pesach Pasul Matzasi, he's not believed. He's not believed for how to lose the Ksuba. That was the part of the shiur you missed before. Because since Ksuba is the Rabbanon, which we're going to soon see, but right now Ksuba is the Raisa, but if Ksuba is the Rabbanon, then the Rabbanon could believe him to say Pesach Pasul Matzasi, therefore she loses her Ksuba. But why should we believe him? So the Rabbanon made a takana that we believe him. On a Doraisa level, if Ksuba were Doraisa, he has no trustability, no credibility to undermine a Chiyuv Doraisa.
He's not
suffering. Well, he's just not trusted. It's not even a suffix, I would say. It doesn't register at all. Zero, zippo, zilch. He can bring to aid him. And that's the whole sugya shushvina, you know, they wait outside and they see if the dam, that old business. But in the absence of two eight, if it's just his word against her, she wins and he loses because ksuba is doraisa. Then the brisa continues and says, Rav Shimon Gamliel, who we just saw in the first brisa, was committed to the position that ksuba is doraisa. Rav Shimon Gamliel, omer ksuba isha eina ella mi divrei Torah, ella mi divrei sofrim. Ksuba is the Rabbanon. So we now have a head-on collision between two brises as to what opinion Rav Shimon Gamliel holds. Is the old Ksuba the Raisa like the first brisa, or Ksuba the Rabbanon like the second brisa? Says the Gemara, Epuch. Are you familiar with Epuch?
No.
Classical. Epuch means that if you have a contradiction between two sources, let's say two Mishnayas or a Mishnah brisa, what you do is Epuch. You switch around the names. And what Epoch means is that this second Brisa should be switched around. Meaning the Tanakhama of this Brisa is Rav Shimon Gamliel. And he's the one who says that Ksuba is Doraisa, Kimora Basulo is derived from Onus and Mefatah. So Gemara is not happy with that. This is also very classical.
Wait, Rabbi Berzin, if there could be deterrence for the contradiction, why isn't the Gemara, where's the Gemara's confusion about who's the author of the Mishnah?
It's not a question of who's the author, but who's the author of which shita. No, there are two shitas recorded in this brisa, right? The first shita, which I call the Tanakama, says that Ksuba is Doraisa. The second shita, which is attributed in our version of the brisa to Rav Shimon Gamliel, holds that Ksuba is Darabona.
The Makshan doesn't. The Makshan just. He was just ignorant of the.
The Makshan was just what?
He was just ignorant of the actual who spoke what in the.
Well, I wouldn't say the Makshan was. There were two versions. You know, the brisos were left out of the Mishnah, so they were very unreliable, so to speak, relative to the Mishnah. Because Rebbe edited the Mishnah, he didn't edit the Brisa. So there are tons of mistakes in the Brisa. Half of Shas, maybe I'm exaggerating, is about mistakes in the Brisa. So the Brisa records two opinions. The second opinion maintains that Ksuba is the Rabbanon, it's being attributed in the version of the Brisa that we have to Rav Shimon Gamliel. Says more, that can't be. Epoch. Switch it around. So Rav Shimon Gamliel is the first Tana in the Brisa. So the second Tana is the Chachamim. And that's how you have to change the price. So we're playing with the price, so like silly putty.
But Rabbi Meir put it in. He put it in so that nobody.
Who?
Rabbi Meir, so that nobody should learn.
Wait a minute, Rabbi Meir. Where's Rabbi Meir? I'm moving tomorrow. Don't hit me with Rabbi Meir. I get very nervous.
So nobody should learn that brisa.
I don't know how I'm going to sleep tonight, right?
So nobody should learn that brisa that way. No one else should learn that brisa that way, so that's why it's in the Gemara.
I'm not sure if I understand what you're saying.
I mean, why does the Gemara take this little detour with April?
April is not a detour. April is the only way of reconciling two brises. Because remember, the first brisa recorded Rav Shimon Gamliel saying that Ksuba Zisha Benat Torah. That was the first brisa.
Right.
Then the Gemara says, Umi Omer Rav Shimon Gamliel Hachi Vatanya, have a second brisa that says the exact opposite. So what do I do with these two brises? So the only way of reconciling these two brises is by utilizing the old Apoch trick. I call it the old trick because the Gemara uses this left, right, and center all over Shabbos. And what Apoch means is, you have Rabbi X saying Y, you have Rabbi Z saying A, just switch around the names, you know, to protect the innocent. You follow what I mean?
I do, but I still don't see why it needs to be the Gemara. We're just going to... I mean, what's the...
Oh, you mean, why was this recorded for all posterity?
Yeah.
Ah, now I understand. I had no clue what you were asking. Sorry. Okay. I'll tell you. I'm not sure if what I'm about to tell you is correct or not. But I think that Apoch is a... What word can I use? Like a stepping stone. What do I mean? The Apoch move is generally a... I try to formulate this, so I'm going to use some bad words here, but it's meant to stimulate the mind of the Gemara. Apoch is always midway through a sugya, at a point of frustration, so to speak, when the Gemara is willing to say, I throw my hands up in the air, and there's no way I can reconcile this without pulling off an Apoch. What's going to come later, and you should always put your, you know,
we're going to go back.
Is the Gemara is going to say, no, I don't need the Apoch.
Okay.
So the Apoch is almost like a stepping stone to stimulate our minds, so that maybe we can slug up this Apoch, because Apoch is like the lowest of the low. You know what I'm saying? What?
It's a cop out.
Apoch is a cop out.
It seems like the reason why I record the Havamina, even though it's not Miskana,
correct. And not only that, a Havamina will stimulate many answers. Like for example, yesterday I gave a shiur on whether the third base of things is going to be built by God or built by man. Like stiras all over the place. So I gave four different answers. You know what I'm saying? That every time the Gemara has a stira, the stira is meant to stimulate the Talmudic thinking, you know, the creative thinking of the Chachmei Yisrael to see. So first the Gemara says Apoch, you know, like, don't even bother with this, you know, there's no other way unless you switch it around. Now, there may be another answer to your question, and I'll tell you what it is. Apoch is important because there are what's called Kloli Hapsak. For example, if there's Machlok Shin Rav and Shmuel, who do we paskin like? All in favor of Rav, raise their hand. Okay, we got two. All in favor of Shmuel, raise their hand. No, it works like this. If they're arguing in Isur V'Heter, we pass them like Rav. If they're arguing in Dini Momus, we pass them like Shmuel. So these are what's called the Kloli Horah. If you take out the Encyclopedia Talmudit under Halacha, there are 50 pages in the Encyclopedia just under Halacha. What are the Kloli Horah? Machlok is Beis Beit Shammai, Machlok is this, that, the other thing. 50 million rules and regulations. So the Apoch is important to allow us to codify the Halacha. Because let's say, for example, this Machlok is between Rav Shimon Gamliel and the Chachamim, we're going to pass like the Chachamim, that's called Yachid V'Rav Malachi K'Ravim, which again is a principle that has 50 million exceptions to it, but that's the general rule. So now the Apoch becomes very critical, because without the Apoch, who's going to pass that Ksuba is D'Oraisa? Correct? But with the Apoch, we're going to pass that Ksuba is D'Rabbanan, because the Apoch is going to tell me now that the Chachamim agree with the second sheet in the Braisa recorded in the Braisa, namely that Ksuba is only D'Rabbanan. Which would be very gishmak, because Rav Nachman was the one who said that the reason we believe him to say Pesach Pesuch Mitzasi and she loses her ksuba is because ksuba is the Rabbana. So we do have vested interest here in coming to the conclusion that ksuba is the Rabbana.
How often that we have in the
first? Do you follow me? So again, I'm giving two answers to Evan's question, and then maybe a third answer, fourth answer, his fifth answer, like all of Shas. But he's asking, why go through this exercise, you know, with an epuch? Just give me the bottom line, you know what I mean? Why have to prove that the version of the Brisa that we have is incorrect and unreliable? So I'm answering him one of two ways. One is that the epuch is just a stepping stone to the next level of Talmudic dialectic, in which we're going to take this to a higher level. And, you know, we're not going to rely on your cop-out. Don't give me this epuch stuff. I don't buy that. You know, you're just being lazy about it. Go back to the scoreboard and work this out. Reconcile the two Brises. The other possibility is that the epoch is very critical to establish who says what. If we have two versions, because we want to know where the halacha will fall. Yeah, what do you say, Adam?
Well, you mentioned that in this case, it's going to end up not using it and not accepting it. But in general,
I think, I don't know, I didn't see the next line. But
in general, is it usually accepted?
That's what I'm saying, that I think, again, you'd have to do a scientific research on this, plug into Shas, you know, now you can do it in Bar Ilan, you do word search for epoch, and go through every sugya of epoch. It's going to take a couple of months, and you'll always see that after the epoch, the Gemara is going to come back and make a renewed effort to try to reconcile the brises. Let's see if I'm right. Ah, I'm wrong so far. Umay chos is the afchat bas raisa epoch kamaisa. Oh. So there's definitely a stereo between the two brises, and you're going to have to pull the epoch trick. But in every case of epoch, how do you know which brisa to turn around? Meaning, why not go back to the first brisa that records Rav Shim Gamliel is the one who says that ksuv is doraisa? Why not say no? It's the Tanakhama who says ksuv is doraisa. Rav Shim Gamliel holds ksuv is derabanan, and that is consistent with the second brisa where Rav Shim Gamliel says it's derabanan. So the Gemara answers Hashamina le Rav Shim Gamliel diomar ksuv asisha midoraisa. We have a Mishnah that records Rav Shim Gamliel as voicing the opinion that ksuv is doraisa. This non we learned in the Mishnah. Okay, let me give you a little background to this Mishnah. There's a place somewhere on the face of the earth, it probably doesn't exist anymore, called Kaputkia. Okay, let's say it's in, maybe it's in Turkey, maybe it's in the Far East, maybe it's in India, Pakistan. I don't know, were we allowed to mention Pakistan? I don't know. But wherever it is, you know, it's out there, and it's called Kaputkia. Now, the thing about Kaputkia is that their money is worth a lot. So let's say you have an Israeli shekel and you had a Kaputkia shekel. The Kaputkia shekel is worth more. It's like now at this point, I hope it'll change, the Canadian dollar is worth two-thirds, I think, of the American dollar, the U.S. dollar. When I was in Canada, it was called par. You can get an American dollar for a Canadian dollar. So all this reflects on the economy of the country. It's very complicated. But be that as it may, in Kaputkia, so let's say I tell you that I married this girl in Kaputkia, right? And I was mischayev to a ksuba. Right? I was mischayev to a ksuba. The ksuba says, I owe her 200 shkolim in Kaputkia. That's a heck of a lot more than, let's say, the Israeli shkolim, right? So the Mishnah wants to know, how much should we demand that he pay? So here's the case. The case is that a man married a woman in Kaputkia, and he divorced her in Palestine. In Eretz Yisrael. So which sum of money is he obligated to pay? Does he have to pay with the currency of Kaputkia or the currency of Israel? Is it determined by the place that he married her or the place that he's divorcing her? Anybody have an intuitive knee-jerk response? Where was he mischayev? Correct, so he should be playing with Kaputkia, right? So guess what? Rav Shim Gamliel Omer, no sin lo mos kaputkia. He's got to pay her mos kaputkia. And the Chachamim say, no. He can pay her with the mos of Eretz Yisrael. And why is that so? Because ksuv is derabon. Had ksuv been doraisa, he can't play games over here. He was mischayev to the ksuva in the place he married her, namely kaputkia. But the rabbanon have a right to be a little bit flexible here on behalf of the Baal. because they invented the whole institution of ksuba. We saw that they were flexible and they reduced her collectability to what? Ziburis. We saw that they were flexible and they allowed him to say Pesach Pasuach Matzasi, all things which on a deraisa level ksuba deraisa would not be acceptable, and they were likewise flexible and they allowed him to pay with the most of Eretz Yisrael, the cheaper currency, Canadian dollar. Right?
It's still worth the same, right? We're just talking about the currency.
No, here it's not worth the same. We're talking dollar for dollar. That's why I give you the example of Canadian dollar versus American dollar. Like 50, you get more for the American dollar
versus 50 shekels. That's what we're talking about.
What do you say?
Like 50 kibbutzkis versus 50 shekels. That's what we're.
Whatever the currency is called, you know, I'm using the word dollar. You know, kibbutz is the name of a country, so I don't know if they called it a shekel, they called it a ma, called it a sella, whatever they called it. Like, for example, in Italy, they had something called the isar back in the Gemara's time. Isar Italki. I think we discussed this once. I don't know, I'm not sure. In any event, now we're talking about a substantial difference in the actual value of it, because if you go to the money changer, you're going to get a fraction of a kaputki, a dollar, for your Israeli dollar. And nevertheless, he pays 200 Israeli dollars.
In this case, who is the derabanan being mekel on who?
On the Baal. It's always going to be on the Baal.
Why should it be on the Baal?
Well, the Rabbanan is saying, look, why the Torah never forced you to pay ksuba. The Torah never recognized ksuba, point to that sheet. So we're going to create ksuba. And we're going to do it for a purpose. We want to make sure that there's something over his head. You know, he can't just wake up one morning and throw a get in his wife's face and say, get at him.
Is it that, or is it to support the wife?
No, support the wife are other elements of the ksuba. We're talking about the mona messiah in a case of divorce. There are other elements of the ksuba. You know, ksuba is a long document, as you know, Rabbi. Amongst the various features of a ksuba is support. But we're talking now about the basic mona messiah, which is only collectible in one of two instances. Either he divorces her or he dies. In those two cases, she collects the mona messiah. And the Rabbanan instituted this to give her some, you know, some security that he won't just wake up one morning and, you know, she burnt the cholent, so he divorces her.
So you think I'd go to the higher value if we're concerned with that issue? For a bottom concerned with that, I would have him pay more than less.
So the Gemara says the Chachamim made all these calculations. They said, look, we're going to impose upon you Masayim Zeus. That's a heck of a lot of money. The Pnei Yeshua says it's, I don't know, you'll have to help me here in contemporary terms, but support for a family for 1 year. Again, in American terms, I would guess it's probably something like $50,000. I don't know. I'm just guessing. Depends how many children you have and what the medium. But it's a significant sum. But they're going to make it a little bit easier for her in other ways because they feel they've accomplished their goal. He's divorcing her here. Let him pay the 200 zuz here according to this value. He invested in the marriage. He made a suda. He's not lying when he says Pesach Pasuach Matzos. Either no to Edim, we're going to rely on him. She wants to collect her ksuba. It's bad enough that he has to pay this ksuba. The Torah didn't require him to pay the ksuba. We're going to let him get away with ziburis.
Sounds like in all these cases the woman comes up short.
She always comes up short because the Rabbanan are saying we're not going to impose. It's enough that we imposed upon him Masayim Zeus. In the other, you know, the other corners, we're going to cut corners. We're going to cut the edges here. So now, what's going on here? Rav Shimon Gamliel says, no. We're going to hit him with the full brunt of the law. He's going to have to pay Mos Kaputkia. Why? Because Ksuba is the right. So now that we have a Mishnah which explicitly quotes Rav Shimon Gamliel as committed to Ksuba Doraisa, when we go back to the Braisa that has Rav Shimon Gamliel saying Ksuba is only the Rabbanan, we're going to do the Epuch. And now we have no choice. Now, do you have a Tosfos here, Dibur Maskil Nosein? Okay, I don't know if we're going to have time to go through the entire Tosfos, but I'll just give you a little bit of a flavor for the Tosfos. Tosfos says, Rav Shimon Gamliel holds that Ksuba is min HaTorah, correct? If that be the case, if Ksuba is min HaTorah, then we have a halacha that's called Kesef Tzuri. Kesef Tzuri is the highest level of Kesef that we know. So therefore, he says, forget about Kaputkia and forget about Eretz Yisrael. If the halacha is 50 shkolim, and that's derived from the parasha of Onus Umafata, where the Torah explicitly says Chamishim shkolim, that's Kesef Tzuri. Kesef Tzuri has an absolute... What's the opposite of relative? Absolute. Is there a better word for it? It has an absolute value. Meaning, it doesn't matter where you are in the face of the earth and what time period you are, we can always evaluate how much Kesef Tzuri is. Again, it's going to translate into different amounts in different currencies in different countries, but it's always the same amount. I guess in economic terms, we talk about buying power, right? The buying power is set in stone. It's absolute. It's not relative in any sense. So Tosa says he doesn't understand what this whole discussion is in the framework of Rav Shimon Gamliel Tzu Doraisa, whether he comes from here and he married her here and he divorced her here. The whole thing is irrelevant. It's always a done deal. It's always a given. It's Kesef Tzuri. Chamishim Shkolim Kesef Tzuri. That's an absolute value. And Tosa is so impressed by this.
That's a derabana.
No, again, Kesef Tzuri is Doraisa. So whenever the Torah says this is how much you have to pay, like for example, Pidgin Aben, the Torah tells us is what?
Five.
Slon. So we have to know how much five slon is worth. It could be that today five slon is worth $50. It could be that in a year from now five slon will be worth $150. Whatever it's worth at that moment, that's what you have to pay. That's called Kesef Tzuri. It's a done deal. Again, now's not the time to figure out how do you calculate these things in Kesef Tzuri. Do you follow? But Kesef Tzuri is a done deal. And Tosis is so impressed by this kasha, he says that perhaps even though he has to pay Chamishim Shkolim, maybe it's not Kesef Tzuri. Maybe in this case Chamishim Shkolim depends upon whatever he was mischayev, wherever he was at that time, and he said, I'm paying Kesef Chamishim Shkolim. It's not defined by this objective Kesef Tzuri like every other Chiyuv Doraisa. But again, the cash is a lot better than the terrorists. Just one more minute. Sorry, Aaron. Ibai Samus says the Gemara. Oh, thank God. I thought I was about to throw in the towel. Ibai Sema Kula Rab Shimon Gamliel. There's no need to introduce that. What did you call it, Max? The cop out of what? Of April. Leave out April. Kula Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. The whole Brisa is Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, exactly as we have. Ah, but we have to pull another move. Okay? The other move is called Chisure Mechzure. We have to add a few words. Bahachitani, here's how you reformulate the Brisa. After we derive from Kesef Yishkol Kemara Basulos, Mikan Somchu Chakom Luxuvas Isha Doraisa, now we have to add a new Bava, what's called a section into the middle of this brisa. Aval ksubas almana. The only ksuba that's deraisa is for a besula, but in the case of a woman that's been married before, eina mi divrei Torah, el mi divrei sofrim, shimon gamliel omer, ksubas almana. Excuse me, eina mi divrei Torah, ela mi divrei sofrim. So that's pretty cool, because the pasuk that serves as a source for ksuba d'oraisa is what? Kimoar. What's the next word? Abasulos. So Rav Shimon Gamliel is saying that you're right. Ksuba d'oraisa, ksuba d'rabbanan. It depends. If it's a basula, it's kimoar basulos. It's d'oraisa. If it's a ksuba for an almana, that's only d'rabbanan. Now, one of the issues that's going to come up, not tonight, but in the future, is when do we say that a woman is a basula? And there's so many different possible answers to that question. When does she get Masai Mzuz Do Rice and Quintor Shinobi? One answer is, well, she's never been married before. And it's the first marriage that makes the second marriage, by definition, into an almon. Others would say, no, she has to actually have the basul intact. It's not enough that she's never been married before. And then in the middle you have various shittas with what's called mukat eitz, where she lost her son through some natural occurrence and so forth and so on, as opposed to a woman who already had a bi'ua. And the story gets very, very complicated. So that's part of what Masechta Ksuvos is about. Okay. Now the Gemara says the following. A guy comes into Beis Din and he says to three dayanim with longer buds and payas, he says to them, Pesach, Pasuach, Matzos. What do the rabbis say to such a guy? Hahu di osel lekami de Rav Nachman, the omer le Pesach, Pasuach, Matzos. Omer le Rav Nachman, asbuhu kof. Take the man, lie him on his back on the table, and hit him. We smack him with kufri. Now, kufri, the Gemara has a havamina. There are two types of palm trees. So the Gemara has a havamina that for lulav, which is called kapos tvarim, you can use kufri. The Gemara says, no, there's no, you can't use kufri. Kufri is something that if you hold it, it rips holes in your skin. Because kufri is a palm tree that dries up very quickly, and the branches start, the smaller parts of the branches start opening up. And as soon as you grab onto it, and the Gemara quotes the pasuk there in Sukkah, the Rachel Darchei Noam, the Chol Nesiva says Shalom. The Torah doesn't want you to take a lulav and end up with rips in your hands. Now, somehow I wish the Torah would have been so lenient with regard to Afiyas Matzis, because I don't bake matzis anymore. I saw too many terrible things happen with baking matzis. And if we would apply Jochet Darchei Noam to my 13 years in Miluim in the army, where every year they would call me to do Hechsher Kelim in these big bases, then I wouldn't be standing around with these Brenners. You know what these Brenners are? It's the most dangerous thing in the world. Every year I would bench Gomel that I did. One year I came really close to killing myself with one of these Brenners. But it's really cool. What they do is, you know, in the army they have these gigantic pots? Mamish gigantic. They have to feed, you know, hundreds of soldiers. So you're standing there with a Brenner, and it's the coolest thing. You won't believe me when I tell you this. But after a certain amount of time, I would say about 10 to 15 minutes, all of a sudden the whole thing goes up in smoke. What happens? It's really cool. There's grease in the lip of this gigantic thing, and it's absorbed. When the kli, I don't know the physics of it, when it hits a certain point of heat, all of a sudden the whole thing catches fire, and all of a sudden it's an amazing sight to see. I'm telling you, you think I'm joking with you. I do like to joke with you, but this is not a joke. What happens is googles and oodles of grease start in one split second rolling out of the clue, and that's when you know you did a good job. You have to wait till that happens, you know. Anyway, so they said asbu kufri, you know, give him we call it shmeitzin in Yiddish, you know, patch, give him patch. Why? Mi bar chasa de chavitole, from these women called bar chasa that laid down in front of him. Rashi says these were prostitutes from the city of bar chasa. Again, don't ask me where that is, I'm not revealing any secrets. But anyway, apparently that good schar over there, and this guy must have traveled very far to Bar Chasa.
He knows what a Pesach Pasu is.
Exactly. How did he know what a Pesach Pasu is? That's Rashi's pshat. Rav Haigon is quoted in the Sheet of Betsy as a different pshat. He says Bar Chasa is a part of a woman's body where, you know, the thing happens. And it's called the Oso Makom. The Chazal don't like to give it a name. And we have to give him Malkus because he already had a Chavata. Chavata means an entry into this Birchasa of these. In other words, this guy is experienced. You know, he comes to you and he says, well, I've never been married. And that's what it says on his Tudah, you know. But how does he recognize the Pesach Pasul? So the Gemara immediately asks, for Rav Nachman, who the Omer Mehemon? Rav Nachman is the same Amora who said before that we believe a guy to say Pesach Pasul Matzasi. Says the Gemara an amazing thing, and I can't figure this Gemara out. If anyone could shed a light on it, Mehemon, he's believed. Umas bina lekuf.
He said both are true.
Both are true.
They both are true.
He's not lying. But he's got experience.
I think it's mashmal. I mean,
what's not to understand?
I think that
I find it very hard to understand. I mean, you're telling me you believe that he found the Pesach Pasuk, and then you're going to beat the guy up. You know,
it's like,
what's the purpose of it? What's the purpose of beating him?
Beating him because he had relations with prostitutes or whatever.
You know. He's still married, right? The two men still intact.
He's still married. You know, this guy is going to come back to his wife that night with a lot of black and blue marks. You know, probably a lot of scars. We may have to hospitalize him, but you know, after he gets over it, it may
but
take
he's not going
to
go back because he's believed.
Oh, so that depends on Sfek Sfek or not. Yeah, you're right. If there's only one Sfek, then he's going to divorce his wife. Yeah, Evan is right about it. The Gemara now offers the second answer. Rav Achoy Mishani, he gives a different answer to reconcile these two statements of Rav Nachman. On the one hand, we believe him to say his Pesach Pasuk, he's not lying. On the other hand, we beat the living daylights out of him because he's having fun, you know what I mean? Is Kan B'Bochur Kan B'Nosu. Rav Nachman says, you know what? I don't believe a Bochur. When I said that a man is believed to say Pesach Pasuk Matzasi, that's not a bochur. That's a person who has experience. He's been married in the past. It's his second marriage. Kan bebochur. And if a man has no experience whatsoever, we don't believe him to say Pesach Pasuk. So Rabbi Bosai, everything we've been saying now is now whittled down by, shall we say, 80%, 90%, I don't know. We've been assuming that a man says Pesach Pasuk, he's believed. No, he's only believed that he's been married before.
The
previous
first answer still is 100%.
Correct. I'm saying, according to this answer, Hahudi also the commentary of Gamliel, the Omar Pesach Pasuk Matzasi. So what does Rav Gamliel have to say to him? Amalei, this is a little bit more sweet and soft. Shema hitiso? Is it possible that when you entered in, you didn't go full swing ahead and hit the besulin? Maybe you and mate, you did it a little bit towards the side, and in such a case, you thought it was a Pesach Pasuk because you didn't feel any barrier hitting against you, but maybe it was this. And he even tries to convince him that maybe this is a possibility. He says, Emshal Chamoshal Ma Dover Domet. It's similar to a case of Adam Shay Mahalch Bishon Laila Vafil. He said, pitch dark. And he gets to the door of his house. There's no light there. And something is stuck, and he's having trouble opening the door. Heat up. So he moves the door a little bit on its side. And I had this with a, what do they call those movable doors? You know, what's the word for it? You know, they go this way on a hinge.
Sliding
doors, right. Thanks. Sliding doors. Sometimes the sliding door goes off the hinge. You have to move it a little bit on the side, right? He says, Mitzal Pasuach, if he moves it a little bit towards the side, there's no barrier there because the barrier is on this side. Low heat, if he goes straight through, you know, pouncing down the middle, Mitzal, no, something is preventing it from going in. So maybe you didn't find that, you know, that collision against the Psulim because you went through Atoya. Ika Diamri, there's another version of what Rav Gamliel said. He didn't ask the guy, maybe you were mate. Amalo Sheva Bemezid Hitiso. Maybe you went straight in, you didn't have any patience whatsoever, and you deliberately hit it so far, so hard, and so fast that Okarto Lidosha Viobra. That you remove the door again in this show, you remove not only the door, but you remove the whole doorpost and everything around it. Basically, you didn't feel that barrier, you know, collision against the basulin. Emshalacham Moshalamad over double yodim shumahal bishan laila fiiti hita b'mezin is mitzol pasua. Sometimes if he does something out of, you know, he's so anxious to do it, you know, in this case he's a baltaiva, you know, he wants to do the action, is lo itav amazin mitzol? No. Do we have another minute? I don't know what the clock says. Ahu di osla kamagam leel ba rebi, vi omale rebi ba alti velo matzasi da. Now that's a pretty strong argument in halachic terms. I didn't find that he died. Amr lo. So she came along and she said, Rebbe, Besula Ha'isi. I was a Besula. Amr lehen, Rav Gamliel says, Hey, Vili Oso Sudar. Let's take a look at the sheets. There was no dam on the sheets. Hevilo asudar ushro b'mayim v'chibso. Right, there was sperm on top of the sheets. So he cleaned off the sperm, and what did he find under the semen? Umatza olav kamati beidamim. Now Galil was so excited, he found the Omer Lo, and he turns to the chassan and he says, Lech Zechev Mikcha, enjoy your marriage. Okay, we'll stop here. Ooh.
Yeah.